we left off on Wednesday, we thought we were learning a sugya about Bava Kama, and then we realized quickly that we were learning more of a sugya in terms of Hilchos Kashrus than about Bava Kama. But as we've seen many times, Teres Hashem Tamim and Mishivas Nefesh, the word of HaKadosh Baruch Hu was one complete unit, so very often you have to learn a different sugya in order to come back to the original sugya. So how did we start this sugya in the first place? So we were addressing almost two different drashos that seemed to be superfluous. That on the one hand, the Torah tells us that v'nafal shama shor or chamor, the Torah Shemafeh explains to us that a boar is potter, the bala boar is potter if shor v'lo adam, if a person falls into the pit and gets killed, so the bala boar doesn't have to pay. So he asks Tosfos, why do I need that pasuk? That drasha seems to be unnecessary. I already know that a bala boar is only chayef to pay if, at the end of the day, the dead animal is usable. That's why we spent so much time earlier in the week on the sugya of psul hamukdashin. If an animal that's a korban that had a mum falls into the boar, so the bala boar is potter because the animal is useless. So if the animal is useless, so then the person is also in effect useless. The dead body is also useless, also worthless. What are you going to do with the dead body? Dead body is also mano. So that was the question that the Rishonim posed. So Tosa suggested that maybe the answer is we could almost walk a tightrope. We'll find the case of a dead body that's mutabana, and I would have made a case to say you would have been chayav. Kamash v'lan yipater. So when all the dust settles, the balabor is still potter, there's no question. What Tosa is searching for is that missing link, that missing case. Where is the case of the dead body that's mutabana? So Tosa suggested that the dead body that's permissible bana is a non-Jewish body. Why is that? Because the whole source for the Isser Hanana Mace is derived from Batamasha Miriam. Miriam was Jewish, so it has to be similar to the model, close to the model of Miriam. It doesn't have to be identical to the model. It doesn't have to be only a woman whose name is Miriam, but it has to be someone who's similar enough that the person has conditions Israel. And then and only then is there an Isser Hanan. So we were questioning, is that really true? Is that premise of Tosis correct? If the premise is true, then it's a good answer. If the premise is wrong, then it's not a very good answer. So we began to search for what other Rishonim have to say about it, and we bumped into a Ramban and Masechet Suvos, but in order to appreciate where the Ramban is coming from, we still needed a little bit of an introduction. So we're still in the introduction to the beginning of the understanding of the Ramban, and eventually hopefully coming back to the Bor part of the sugya. So the Ramban was taking issue with the Shittas HaRambam in Mar Mokam number 6. The Ramban had taught us that a dead body is basically not kosher. And it's anybody that says, oh, no, yet a dead body is not kosher. Or for that matter, a live body is also not kosher. Any human flesh is not kosher. How not kosher is it? So the Rambam says, well, not terribly not kosher, in the sense of it's not a lav. If you would consume human flesh, you wouldn't be in violation of a lav in the Torah, because it's not really an animal in the fullest sense of the word. On the other hand, it is included, it's covered by what we call an iser aseh. The Torah says, Osato chelu, this is what you can eat. You can eat cow meat, you can eat goat meat, you can eat sheep meat, you can eat one of the seven wild animal meats that are kosher. But what you can't eat, by implication, is human flesh. So if a person goes out and eats human flesh, he's in violation of an iser of kashrus, but it's not a full-fledged iser in terms of a prohibition. There wouldn't be malchus, but it would be a prohibition, what we call iser aseh. So we left off on Wednesday with the Ramban's question against the Rambam. The Ramban said, if the Rambam is right, that human flesh is technically not kosher, it doesn't really matter to the degree of not kosher, but it's in the parasha of not kosher flesh, if that's the case, so then why is milk that comes out of a human being permissible? The Ramban says explicitly that milk comes from a human being is obviously permissible. Why is that? Why don't we apply the rule of kol yotzei min ha'asur asur, whatever comes out of a non-kosher source, automatically is not kosher. So if the Rambam is right, so that all milk should have been treif, should have been yotz, should have been asur. So what's the answer to the question of the Rambam? So we mentioned at the end of Shir Wednesday that the Magid Mishnah suggests that maybe the Rambam differentiates between an iser aseh and an iser lo aseh. When something is prohibited, like chazir, like a camel, real bona fide surim in terms of lavim, then we carry over the rule of kol yotze min asur asur. But if you're dealing with something which is only an iser aseh, then that rule falls by the way. So that rule doesn't apply. And the question is, in lum dus wash that pisa. What's that based on? So we really weren't sure on Wednesday. It seems like an almost arbitrary distinction. If it's treif, it's treif. What's the difference to the degree of how treif it is? So perhaps the answer to that question is based on a beer that appears in the Brisker Rav in the beginning of Masechet Zevachim, where the Brisker Rav wasn't addressing this particular point, but the point that the Brisker Rav addresses could quite possibly help us in terms of this. And that is really going back to the ABCs in terms of this prohibition called Yotzi bin Asur Asur. The Gemara derives from Sukkim, the milk that comes from a camel is Asur, the egg that comes from an ostrich is Asur. Anything that comes from a non-kosher source is automatically not kosher, called Yotzi bin Asur Asur. One could raise a fundamental question, what the nature of this din is all about. Hakira, a priska hakira, what's the nature of this din? So one can understand that this is almost like a new independent isser, a new prohibition, it's based on a pasuk. So on the one hand, you're not allowed to eat a pig, and then, oh, by the way, in addition, you're not allowed to drink pig's milk. Is pig's milk a pig? Not a pig. A pig is, the guy goes oink oink, hangs out in the hill. That's a pig, that's a chaza. I'll say, asra ator, the Torah says, a chaza l'sochlu. I have a cup of milk that happened to have come from a chazir. That's not chazir, Amar Batorah. That's an iser. I didn't say it's mutar. I'm not minimizing the iser. But that's not chazir, Amar Batorah. That's a separate independent iser. That's an iser b'fnei atzmo. But maybe no. Maybe the pshat of the iser of Yotzi bin Asur is as follows. I would have thought that the only thing that's included in the iser of eating a chazir is the flesh of the chazir. Piece of ham, piece of bacon, or whatever else comes from a chazir. That's chazir. Milk, I never would have called that chazir. That's not pesach chazir. Comes the pasuk and says, by the way, this is also called chazir. Don't think that the milk that comes from the pig is any less piece of chazir than a slice of bacon. It's all the same thing. That the pasuk that teaches us yotzi bin asur asur is not teaching me an independent iser. It's not an iser b'fnei atzmo. Rather, it's simply being megala to me. It's simply revealing to me that this is part of the original iser. So a very lomdashab, a briska chakira. I have a piece of chaza sitting on the table. I have a cup of chaza milk sitting on the table. I want to know what's the relationship between the two. Do I say this is Isser A, this is Isser B? They have really nothing to do with each other. Or do I say no? That it's not Isser A and Isser B. It's all Isser A. It's the same Isser. It's just that I needed a Chiddush HaTorah to reveal to me that part, that this cup of milk is in fact also Dinu Kechazer. Briska Chakir Manaf Kamina. Risk Rav says, if ever simple enough can be in the Machlekes, Tosas, and the Rambam, would a person be Chai Malkus for drinking pig's milk? Would a person be Chai Malkus for eating an eagle's egg? What's the Shaila? In order to be Chai Malkus, you have to violate a law of Amar Batorah. You have to violate a Pesuk in Chumash. The Torah says, don't do the following. Then we can discuss being Chai Malkus. So here the Torah says, don't eat Chazer. Then the Torah also says, in a drasha, almost like a roundabout way, by the way, Yotzi bin Asur is Asur. So comes the Rambam and says, you're not Chayav Malkus for eating the ostrich eggs. You're not Chayav Malkus for drinking the pig's milk. Why is that? Very simple, says the Brisker Rav. The Torah doesn't say, don't drink chaza milk. The Torah says, Mibsaram lo sochel. The Torah says, don't eat the flesh of the chaza. And then, by the way, we have a drasha tucked away somewhere that teaches us, oh, by the way, you can't drink chaza milk. So Ram says, that's true. You can't drink chaza milk, but that's not called chazer. That's an independent iser, and is independent iser, but doesn't say lo fishta chaza milk. It just says, don't eat chaza meat. So when the person drinks the milk, he's not a violation of a law in the Torah. Therefore, he's not chay malchus. And Tosus of Masechus Chulin, the third practice agrees. Tosus holds that you are Chayav Malkus. Why is that? But it doesn't say don't drink chazer milk. So the Brisker Rav explains, that's called eating chazer. Once I have a Chiddush HaTorah, that milk and meat are in a sense the same, so then when the Torah says, B'Bisarim Lo Sochelu, this is also B'Bisarim Lo Sochelu. This is also considered to be part of the prohibition by the law of eating chazer. So Brisker Rav, in the beginning of Masechus Bachot. So now, one could argue, that's the Rambam Lashon Tosu as well. If you hold that the nature of the Yisr of Yotzi bin Asur, things that come out from a non-kosher source, are basically part of the source, that the Torah is just simply megala to me that B equals A. It's the same thing. This is Chazir. So then the Ramban is a very, very strong question against the Rambam. Because if the Torah says that you can't eat human flesh, according to the Rambam, that's an Isser of Kashrus, it's an Isser essay. And the Torah gives us a rule called Yotzi bin Asur. So Yotzi bin Asur means that anything that comes out of the Isser is the Isser, it's the same thing. So that it's a very arbitrary distinction to say, well, only Belav and not by essays. Like, with Mechatek, so why would you say such a thing? But if you hold the second part, which is the Rambam, as the Brisker Rav claims, the Rambam Lashita also, that Yotzi bin Asur is a Chiddush HaTorah. It is not Chazamit. It is not flesh. It is a separate Chiddush HaTorah, a separate independent Isser that has, in effect, nothing to do with the original Isser. So then we have a rule, Ein lecha bo lechidusho. The rule is that the Torah only prohibits, and the Torah gives us the chiddush gadol, we have to be very, very limited in the scope of that chiddush. The Torah gave us the chiddush of Yotzim and Aser by lavim. The Torah never said it by essays. You have no right to extrapolate from lavim to essays. If you would have held like Tosfos, like the Ramban, that it's not a chiddush haTorah that this is Aser, the Torah is just telling you this is part of the original Aser. Once, halachically, it's part of the original Aser, so that it's part of the original Aser in Kol Dinei haTorah, then to distinguish between essays and lavim is arbitrary. But once you tell me that it's an Issa b'Fleyas, it's a new brand new Issa, good. Al zeh asra Torah by lavim, al zeh lo asra Torah by essays. So we could solve the question of the Ramban against the Rebbe. But this is still part of the introduction to go back to appreciate where the Ramban's coming from. So we take a look back at the Ramban on the 7th of the Ramban Kamos, when the Ramban is very, very strong, very, very, very strong critique of the Rambam, and the Ramban insists that Pesar Adam is not included in Hilchos Kashrus. Now the Ramban makes it about face. We take a look at the 7th of the Ramban Kamos. It's three lines from the bottom, the middle of the line. The heavy yedeya, when a Rishon says that means he's trying to catch your attention. Don't make the following mistake include. Heavy yedeya should know the following. The daf gav basa ben achai. When am I arguing with the Rambam? When am I telling you that human flesh is basically mutter min haTorah? That's when the person is still alive. Aval b'meis, also b'hu ano. If you take flesh from a dead body, it says forget it. That's also b'ano. The ain't tzach lo b'achila. I don't need hukos kashas for that. It's also b'ano based on other sources. One of the other sources will be egla rufa gamrina b'gzereshava. Quoting the Gemara that we spoke about, the Gemara in Kedusha, the Gemara of Adizara, that just as Egla Arufa is prohibited to derive benefit from, so too, Vatama Shav Miriam, or for Shavas Egla, Xavier Shava, one is not permitted to derive benefit from a dead body. V'echad Yisra No, V'Yisra Achila B'Klal. Everything is included. You're not allowed to eat, you're not allowed to benefit, etc. So far the Ramban just almost minimized his own sheet. He put the brakes on his own sheet, and he said, I'm the biggest believer that human flesh is permissible in haTorah, but even I can see that if it's from a dead body, it's aser. But now the rabbi comes to the punchline. Umiyu begoy eini yodea bo iser. However, if it's a non-Jewish body, then I don't know, because I just disagree with the Rambam. That's not part of the parish of kashrus. There's no iser esi of kashrus. And if the entire iser is hinging upon the drasha derived from Miriam from Egla Rufa, I don't know, says the Ramban. Tell me Miriam Gamrinan. Because after all, the source is from Miriam. Miriam was Jewish. So the Ramban concludes, Vitzarachiyun. He says, I don't know. I'm not sure, Tzarachiyun. And then he references the Masechah Shabbos, Berakha Matzidin, the Rishami, Yishrayi, Behatranazu. He thinks maybe he has a Raya from Rishami that maybe, in fact, is permissible. So the Ramban kind of leaves us hanging. He doesn't commit himself completely. He commits himself to disagreeing with the Rambam, but when it comes to Ar Shaila Lamaisa, can you get enough from a non-Jewish body? The Rambam is not convinced what the din is. So we have an absolute certainty. Taisus is for sure that it's mutter, and the Rambam is hesitating, not sure whether it's mutter or not. Are there any other rayas, any other statements of Chazal? So there is a potential proof. I didn't put it on the Mamre Kremes. It's a Gemara tucked away in Maseches Bechoros, where some saw this as a possible proof. The Gemara tells us that the Talmidim of Rabbi Ishmael were, for the purposes of halacha, were trying to determine exactly how many evarim, how many limbs exactly are there in the body. Now we speak about Ramach Evarim, Shesag Yideim. So they were trying to get to that number, trying to figure out exactly. So how do you do that? So there were two ways to study medicine. In the ancient world, so studying medicine was like studying philosophy. They sat around and they philosophized. They thought that this is why people get sick. This is how the body works. So sometimes they were right, and very often they were very, very wrong. So it was lit. The doctors tell me a little bit of the history of medicine. It was later when they came to the realization that we better actually look at something. We better start opening our bodies and looking and seeing in order to understand what's really going on. This was a general machlokes about how to look at the world. The Greek philosophers, they were great at being philosophers, but they didn't always come to the right conclusions because they didn't look too much. They sat around in the academies with the door closed and they came up with good svaras. So when you say a good svar, sometimes it's good, sometimes it's not so good, sometimes the matzias is wrong. So when it came to medicine, so Chazal were already 10 steps ahead. They realized that if you don't look at the body, you're not going to figure out what's going on. But the problem is, how do you get a body? Where do you get a body from? So So how do you find a dead body? So they found that there was a non-Jewish person who had been put to death by the government. The Gemara says they were killed by Cleopatra. She was the Egyptian queen. So she killed somebody, and somebody this body they got access to. So it was a dead body, and they were able to study it. No one was claiming it. So they were able to study the body. So the Gemara says that Talmid Rabbi Shmuel actually studied, and they made a cheshbon, and they counted up how many avarim there were for purposes of learning. They basically had an anatomy class 101. So the Chazon Ish in Maseches Becharis raises the question, is that what is the permissibility to do that? How are you allowed to do such a thing? How are you allowed to just stop, take apart, study a body? Isn't that a violation of being neneh from a davar asur b'hanah? That was the Chazon Ish's suggestion. So the Chazon Ish says, well, one simple answer to the question would be, well, it's a goyish body. It's a non-Jewish body. A non-Jewish body would be permissible. That would be the simplest, most basic answer to the question. And then the Chazon Ish backtracks a little bit. Says, you know, not so simple. We don't even know for sure that a goyish body is mutar b'hanah. After all, Tosfos said it, but the Ramban wasn't even so sure. So there has to be another pshat. There has to be an alternate reading of this Gemara. So the Chazon Ish offers a suggestion, which may become critical for us halacha l'maisa. The Chazon Ish says that maybe you can argue that goyish bodies are also maybe the other side of the Ramban is correct. Possible mitzachim. We don't know. We're not sure. But says the Chazon Ish, who said what the Talmidim were doing is considered to be hanah? Why is it not called hanah? Says the Chazon Ish, what were they doing? They were simply gleaning information. They were simply just kind of trying to find something out. They wanted to learn some info from studying this body. Is that called hanah? We usually think hanah is something that translates into dollars and cents. Let's say, for example, if I take something that's asur b'hanah and I feed it to my dogs, that's called being nana. Why? Because I have to feed my dog something, and if I don't feed my dog this, so then I have to feed them something else. So I was nana from the dog food. Let's say I have this tray for food. I have a davar asur b'hanah, and I sell it to the goyim. So I sell it to a goy, I get money in return. I made money off of it. So usually, says the Chazon Ish, hanah is something that translates into financial gain. Something that's simply just getting information, just becoming smarter, becoming more knowledgeable about the world. Who says that's called hanah in the first place? Just simply gaining information from something. Maybe that's not considered to be hanah. So the Chazon Ish says, I'm not sure. I don't know what the answer is. But either one of these answers would suffice for that story about the Talmid Rabbi Shmuel. Either it was permissible because it was a non-Jewish mace, or it was permissible because this is not considered to be hanah, just simply gaining information. So when I first saw this Chazon Ish, I thought to myself, oh, this would be a great lumat chos. This would be a good way to explain why doctors are permitted to go to medical school, are permitted to study bodies. This has been already an age-old question for hundreds of years. The post we've raised, what right does a person have to study a body, to get hanah, to get benefit from the study of the body? Isn't that a violation of the isra hanah? So traditionally, the answer to that question has always been, that's a non-Jewish body. Non-Jewish body, it's about the banah. The Vilna Gaon says, the mikra din, we pass like the Tosfos, and finish it. That's always been the answer that's been given. That mikra din, there really is no isra hanah, it's a non-Jewish body. Again, that's obviously assuming that it's a non-Jewish body. So one has to try to be careful about that. And we assume that rove bodies are non-Jewish. So a person, if a medical school student doesn't know to the contrary, you can probably assume that that's the case. What if he does know to the contrary? What if the body comes out with a big tag on it? That's a very, very clear thing. In today's world, names are not an indication of anything. 50 years ago, if you saw you saw a Schwartz, a Friedman, a Cohen, you know, yeah, it's a 99.99% chance that it's Jewish. In today's world, it's the opposite is true. So you can have, as we spoke about yesterday, you can have a very, very non-Jewish name that unfortunately may very well be Jewish. You can have a very, very Jewish name that means the person's mother, or grandmother, or third generation not Jewish. So names are not as indicative as they were in days gone by. But if for whatever reason the person comes to the conclusion that this is a Jewish body, that's a big, big problem. So first of all, it's a problem of being nah. And then there are multiple other problems. There are problems of nivul hameis, of simply just dissecting bodies, taking apart bodies, doing things that are disgraceful to the bodies, and bitul mitzvos kvura. There are a whole peckle of problems that can occur if it's a Jewish mace. So one should try to make sure that it's a non-Jewish. Again, if you don't know to the contrary, you can assume that the robe is that it's probably a non-Jewish mace. If I'm not mistaken, anyone here went to Einstein?
Yeah.
Oh, so did Einstein used to have that policy? Still have the policy? At one time, there was a policy that Einstein would officially only get from non-Jews. it's not part of YU anymore. I can't say I don't know what the policy is anymore. But at one time, that was the policy that they would only get from not to get involved in these kinds of shadows. Again, I don't know what the facts are now. So
why can't you say that since this is an issue of saving lives?
Oh, very good, excellent. So Ramesha was asked this question about a different context. Ramesha was asked the question. He said we could permit a doctor to do a whole bunch of different things based on that. He says a doctor has to get into medical school, so. So anything he does, he could drive through an exam on Shabbos because the Topikuch Nefesh means at some point you have to stop. So the question is, where do you stop? So, you know, the kid's in third grade, so his mother already says to him, if you don't do well in science today, you're not going to get into medical school. So Topikuch Nefesh had to have on Shabbos. So at what point does the puck stops here? So Moshe says that when a person is already a doctor, means he's trained to save lives, and then you say that he talks a lot, whatever's necessary that he's allowed to do. Otherwise, it's almost like the end of itself. This was actually a big topic, a very, very controversial topic in Europe a couple hundred years ago when they started to really study bodies, when they started to do autopsies, they started to study bodies in the medical schools, and the shaila was whether you could do it on Jewish bodies. This was already an old shaila. So the overwhelming majority of the poskim said that you can't do that. That you can't hide behind pikuach nefesh. It's just too far removed from the degree of real pikuach nefesh. But getting back to our story, so I used to always think that, okay, great, according to this chazdish, it's mutter no matter what. If you go down the traditional approach, that the reason why it's mutter to study bodies is because it's a goyish body, great, wonderful. And even if you want to argue with Tosfos, even if you want to play devil's advocate, you know, like the Ramban Suffolk, then maybe the non-Jewish bodies are also osur, it's still okay. You know why it's still okay? Because it's only gleaning information. You're just getting information, and getting information has to be mutter. One of those two answers has to be okay, because otherwise the Tamidi Rabbi Shmuel were doing something that was usur. So either you have to go down the route of goyish bodies or down the route of gleaning information. One of the two has to be correct. That's what I used to think until I went back to read the Chazanish a second time around. If you look at the Chazanish carefully, the Chazanish writes, you know why gleaning information is mutter? Because it's not marketable. It's that you wouldn't pay for it anyway. It's just a nice, cute piece of information I picked up. But I wouldn't like pay somebody for this information. Wait a second. That guy pays, I don't know what medical school is going for now, but I imagine it's a couple of pennies.
It's not
so
free.
It's not free. I mean, unless you get yourself into some very, very special medical school. So medical school costs a lot of money. So to say that the cost of anatomy doesn't really cost me anything, of course it's worth something. I'm going to use this information and use it to make a parnasah down the line. The Tamid Rabbi Shmuel, they weren't going to get paid more as Rosh Hashivas for the piece of information that they got. But the doctor who becomes a good doctor, so he's going to get paid a lot more money. Of course, this course is going to impact on his ability to be a doctor down the line. So I don't know. I'm not sure that second reason would apply. Okay, the first reason, those are okay. You know, those who traditionally follow the traditional approach, it's a non-Jewish mason, just forget it, it's Heta Gomor. Definitely have what to rely on. But I was wondering whether that second, for a while I thought that Chazanish was very helpful, and then I backtracked a little bit, I wasn't so sure. But I think that Chazanish may be helpful for other things. Now, what the Chazanish tells us that just gleaning information that's not really marketable, not really worth anything in the market, is not really called hana'ah. So I think that may be helpful for other things. We actually had, believe it or not, two times at a pasuk in Shaila, it was called the Issur of Maaseh Shabbos. If somebody does a malacha for you on Shabbos, so if it depends with a Jew, a non-Jew, it gets complicated, you're not allowed to be nenef in that malacha. You're not allowed to benefit from that malacha on Shabbos. You have the Shabbos depending on the details of how it was done. So I had actually two different shailas that was asked. What happened in my own home? And somebody presented me a shaila. I think it was the same basic issue. And I think that Chazanish may be a little bit of a tzad lahokil. So the shaila that happened in my house was a couple of years ago. One of the clocks, the clock's in the wall, which has a little battery stuck in it. So the battery died. The clock stopped telling the right time. So we happened to have had a non-Jewish woman in the house helping cleaning up that particular Shabbos. So she saw what happened. So she chopped what happened. So she went ahead and she went to the drawer, pulled out a new AA battery, took out the old one, stuck with it, and turned the clock to the right time, and shut, and left it back on the wall. So I raised the question, am I allowed to look at that clock for the rest of Shabbos? Are you allowed to be nana from the time? Because the din is, if a non-Jew does a malacha for a Jew, also lahanos at kadesh yasu, if they wait enough time till Shabbos is over, they can do the malacha. If they wait another 30 seconds after Shabbos to give them the time to do it. So there are twofold questions. Maybe one could argue they were really doing it for themselves because they wanted to see the right time. I don't know, I'm not sure. If a goy does a malacha for themselves, so then you're allowed to piggyback on them. So maybe that was mutter anyway. But even if, let's say, they were doing it right before they walk out the door, they were doing it only for me. So I was wondering, is that called being nene? What's the hanor? I'm gleaning information as to what time it is. Would I pay somebody for that? Let's say I'm walking the street, I don't know what time it is, but I'd say, listen, I give you $1 to tell me what time it is. And most people probably wouldn't do that. Telling time is not a market. There used to be, I remember, way before cell phones and way before, you know, digital, and before, there used to be a phone number you can call to get the right time. If you wanted to know the right time, you had to actually call, imagine. Wasn't that long ago? There used to be a phone number to call to find out what the weather was going to be. What the, can you imagine? What the, sports. Yeah, you had to pay. And it cost money, that phone. Not like today. Today, like... no, it was my son who just called me from Eretz Yisrael. He just called me before. So, normally, you know, 50 years ago, if someone called from Israel, the world like would come to an end. The person's calling, what? I remember, forget, from Israel. If someone, when I was a little kid, if someone was calling from New Jersey, it's long distance, quick, take the call. So now it's a little bit of a different world. Now a kid calls from Israel, hang in there another 5 minutes, that's going to happen. So getting back to that story, so the telling of the time is not so marketable anymore. So maybe according to the Chazdish, maybe it would be mutter. So that was a tzad, possibly. So the same exact shayla presented itself. Somebody asked me, a different scenario, same shayla. Somebody was also something how the world has changed. So on Shabbos, somebody was walking. They got lost. They weren't sure exactly where to go. And car realized that they were like looking around, trying to read the street signs where they were. So a non-Jew pulls over and asks them, you know, you seem to be lost. So and again, that's a concept that wouldn't have existed in days gone by. The concept of being lost, only in Shabbos do people get lost. If you think about it, there's no other time that the first thing you put on your ways, whether you're driving or walking, ways works for walking also. So you just have to be careful because it won't take you down the one-way street. Right. So you have to, you take it to raise like a cup. You know, the only time I use ways for walking is Eretz Yisrael. I don't have a car in the summer, so I usually end up doing a lot of walking. So I'm sitting there in my Israeli version of ways, trying to find my way without having to go around 16 different side streets. So this person was walking. So the person pulls over in the car and says, you know, you seem to be lost. So the person said, yeah, I'm just looking for such and such street. So the person said, you make this turn over here and this turn over here. So, you know, they saw it was half the person. So the person said, wait a second, let's do it the old-fashioned way. The person in the car said, quit, I'm going to write it out for you. So they yank out a piece of paper and pencil on Shabbos and they write down the directions. So the person that was wondering, Alom Neshashayla, can I use those directions to get where I want to get to? Yeah, the guy, I hope it was the guy who did the writing, but they did the melacha for you. They didn't do it for themselves, they clearly did it for you. So the Mishnah says, if a non-Jew lights a fire, you're not allowed to use it. Non-Jew builds something, you're not allowed to use it. You have to wait Klesh Yasu. So are you allowed to use these directions or not? So it's Alom Neshashayla. So maybe you can argue that this is called not really being Nehneh, because is this payable? I mean, would I pay to ask somebody, you know, give me $10 to tell me how to get somewhere? Most people probably wouldn't do that. So if that's the case, then one could argue maybe that's not called being nana from somebody that's marketable. So I don't know. So I'm not sure. I don't know what the dinner would be. There's another potential problem. A person who wrote something on the paper, it could be that maybe shtickle nola at all, something that was written. The post could talk about it. If you have a newspaper that was printed on Shabbos, maybe a shayla. It's a new thing. Here was a blank piece of paper. Now it's a piece of paper with information on it. That's a whole other angle of the shayla. But yeah, not for now. So getting back to that story. So we're trying to figure out, is the goy shemes mutaban or not? It impacts an absolute give because we want to know what the answer to the question of Tosfos is about Bor. So we went fishing to a Rambam and a Ramban and a Chazanish and a Mechayres. At the end of the day, we don't have an absolute clear answer to this question. We hope that it's Mutabana. It's going to help the doctors. It's going to help Tosfos. It's going to help Avi Kama. But the Ramban wasn't 100% sure if that's the case. Hopefully that's here next week. We'll continue for this point and then branch out a little bit and see how this discussion about the Nova Mace is going to come back to Avi Kama. It's going to become important for other dimensions of the sugya as well. My pleasure.